Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast with Benji Nyson. This is our Giro d'Italia Stage 17 Vuelta a España Stage 2 recap, both brought to you by Lecol, running dual grand tours right now. Everyone's running on fumes. You, me, Benji, the riders, but we're grinding it out because, you know, we've only got about 3 weeks left of this season, just under 3 weeks left. And before we know it, racing will be gone for 2020, so we're making the most of it while it's here. As I said, the podcast is brought to you by Lecol, our partner for the Giro and the Vuelta. They produce performance road cycling apparel, and they provide the kit to Bahrain McLaren in the Pro Peloton. Bahrain obviously having a very good day with Tratnik winning a stage yesterday in that Lecol kit. We saw another man today in the bright orange up there, pretty prominent in today's Giro stage. So Bahrain have actually had a pretty good Giro in going in the breaks. If you want to check out Lecol, you can go to www.lecol.cc, link in the description, and enter checkout code LRGiro15. That's all caps, LRGiro15. For 15% off at checkout. But moving on to Giro Stage 17, Benji, we spoke about this course design. Our services are available for consulting if any race organizers want to hit us up, or the Flamme Rouge for designing courses. But we spoke about this on the preview, and they had the climbs in the wrong way around, unfortunately, in terms of their difficulty for an exciting stage. It's 204 kilometers, starting in Bassano del Grappa, where the Lecol factory is, and then they did the two hardest climbs of the day first. Two count ones, Forcella Valbona, 21.5 k, is about 6.7%, nothing to be trifled with, and then the Monte Bandone, which, despite having the same average gradient as the Valbona, is and the same length really. It had steeper sections. There's like a plateau in the middle, so it's actually a much steeper climb in. About the middle third, or the last third, was actually quite hard. So that was in the middle. That crested like 80 k's from the finish. So that's a long way from the finish if there was a GC man trying to go solo. That was our problem with it. Then there was a Cat 3, Passo Durone, 10.5 k, 6%, not that steep. Then like an uphill false flat section, and then the Madonna di Campiglio, 12 k's, at about 5.9%, with a bit of a plateau runoff at the end. Not a climb that's particularly terrifying for anybody. With good weather conditions, not much rain, and that sequencing of climbs, we didn't really expect too much from the GC men. But a breakaway obviously went, and as in all these Giro stages, the GC teams were content to let it get a pretty comfy gap, Benji.
Yes, the breakaway was a large one, and it had some riders that inferred that some people in the peloton, like Apozzo Vivo, was planning something because he had three teammates in there, O'Connor, Manches, and also Gebregsabir. So three men for MDT. Also, before the race started, had said that he wanted to do something. So if he wanted to do something, like you said, he'd have to do it on the first few mountains. Looking at the rest of the breakaway, we have the likes of Bice, once again, he was the guy that is currently leading that kilometer classification in the breakaway. He has a bit of luck there because Eurosport NL actually counted the breakaways as in full and not counting them if only under 10 riders are in it. And if every breakaway was counted throughout this whole Giro, Thomas Gent would be leading that and not Mattia Bice. So yeah, it certainly shows that that classification has a bit of an odd meaning to it, due to the fact that only half the breakaways get counted in. Nonetheless, De La Parte CCC, together with Zakarin, probably the strongest climber of the two. Then Rodriguez was in there, not Joaquim Rodriguez, he's retired. Adam Hansen for a tiny bit. Guerrero, once again for K1 points, but no Visconti, so free reign for Guerrero today. All K1 points that he could take were his, but De Gendt was trying to throw a bit of a dash into that by taking one of the K1s as well among the parkour. Carretero in the breakaway for Movistar to get a bit. Sepulveda, Cataldo, Filela, four Movistar riders. Then it's for Ineos, Van Hooke as well for Lotto Soudal, so together with the Gent, and Ulisi as the final rider in that breakaway. Large breakaway, but in the end, it started thinning out pretty quickly, and it became clear that the Gent seemed to work for Van Hooke, but then again, it's hard to notice because Gent always rides in every breakaway he goes to because he keeps that same amount of watts going, and it seems to favor him usually when he goes in the breakaway. And today that was not anything different. He was closing gaps to people that tried to attack on climbs and so forth. As I said, KOM points taken by Guerrero, some by the Gent, but I think that Guerrero is now currently leader in that classification. Let me confirm that in a second here. There we go. Guerrero is indeed leader, 198 points, 50 more than Visconti, who really lost it today. So will be hard to come back from that. When it really changed was, for me, on the Passo Durone. We'll talk about the break first, I guess, and then we can go into GC. On the Passo Durone, we saw that break split up into two pieces, and at the front we had Zakarin, Van Hooke, Carretero, Cataldo, Gebreig, Zabir, O'Connor, and Dennis. So two riders for NTT still there, Van Hooke in that front group, and the second group on the Passo Durone had Bernsteiner still in it, the man who is currently on 9 minutes 53 before the stage started, and at that moment was virtually on the podium of this Giro. So that's one massive lead, but the peloton still had to accelerate after that. Bernsteiner bridged up from that second group to the first one together with the Gent and Villela, and we had a larger breakaway group, including three riders from Movistar, then Carretero, Cataldo, and Villela. But those Movistar riders, they didn't really do too well, I'd say. I feel like Cataldo attacked at a certain point in the race. He got a bit of a gap in a descent, and that's the only thing I saw from these Movistar riders, because other than that, they just dropped and dropped and dropped on every climb. So rather disappointing to be in the breakaway with four riders and just not be good enough. Do you feel like they should have gone for a different tactic or something?
I think probably Cataldo was their strongest rider, and they burnt him with a really, really early attack when none of the other guys who were the serious stage contenders, Dennis, De Gendt, Pernsteiner, and O'Connor, none of them were doing anything. They were chilling, trying to follow Wheel. Well, apart from De Gendt. De Gendt's never chilling. He's always pulling, even when they have a 10-minute gap. But just kind of doesn't. It's kind of like he's on autopilot. He can't help it. But yeah, they on the Durone climb, those guys clearly showed they were who the stage winner was going to come from. Because yeah, it was just going to be another Category One climb straight afterwards. So if you weren't looking too crash hot on the Cat 3 just before it, then you probably weren't going to be doing well on the longer climb straight afterwards. But they all came back together after there was a descent into the Madonna di Campiglio climb. Zakarin, he was on the hoods, but he stayed on. And it was actually, it seemed to me, either his teammate, Victor Delaparte, the CCC was in the break. He either got dropped on the descent or there was like a surge on the flat. I think the Gent attacked on the flat. There's like a really short valley just after the descent before the Campiglio and before like the uphill drag started, and De Gendt attacked trying to get a gap, and Delaparte was on the wrong side of that. Zakarin was there the whole time, and so he'd obviously stayed in pretty good contact after the descent. Then they got onto the Campiglio, pulling for a little bit, Pernsteiner, De Gendt, etc., and then they knew they had a big gap on the GC guys, so they actually started playing cat and mouse and attacking pretty early. And main contenders, favourites in the live markets at this point with a large group like this, where Dennis was actually the favourite, just ahead of Zakarin. Pernsteiner was third and O'Connor was fourth favourite. And it was De Gendt who has kept attacking, and I didn't know if he was working, actually, Benji, for Han Van Ooker, because it didn't make sense to me why De Gendt was pulling often with the whole of this large breakaway behind him, Zakarin right on his wheel, unless I thought, oh, is he just setting up a Van Hooker attack later? That didn't eventuate, so it didn't really make too much sense to me. And Zakarin was not following any attacks, so when De Gendt did attack rather than pull, he would lean on Dennis to close it. Rowan Dennis, I think, rode really selflessly today and kind of hampered his own chances in this breakaway, I think, by closing down a lot of attacks and being alive to them. And it might have cost him in the end, although I saw him take a Coke can before the climb in the valley and maybe he wasn't feeling it, but still, every little bit counts. As well, NTT looking strong. Pernsteiner, he was riding, I think he had a little acceleration, but it's hard to tell with him because I'm not sure if he can hit 800 watts. But I mean, still, he rode really well today. But it was eventually Ben O'Connor, the man who was denied yesterday by Jan Tratnik, who looked really strong. Both of them, the young Australian at NTT, he attacked with 6Ks to go. And he got a good gap, 20 seconds straight away, because this time there was hesitation. He timed it after there had been a series of attacks, maybe an acceleration from Dennis Zakarin de Gent, and it was O'Connor that went. No one was really chasing initially, and then because Zakarin, I think, either had bad legs today or like not his best legs, and I think it was that, and also he was riding, like he straight up refused to take a turn today, like at all. Sitting on Dehent's pulling, and with Pernsteiner, so Dehent and Pernsteiner kind of changing turns, but the gap was already at 20 before they started doing that, and then Dehent got fed up or tired of Zakarin sitting on, and he'd been working a lot, Dehent, and Pernsteiner attacked out of that group, moving up on GC2, going for the stage win, but then it was like 3.5Ks, 30-second gap, 35-second gap to Ben O'Connor, who was looking good, good cadence. The climb suited him, I think, a little bit more, this sort of climb. And, like, just this, like, he's better, obviously, on these climbs than the sharp pinch accelerating yesterday where Tratnik beat him. And Pernsteiner couldn't really make much impact on that gap. Became clear that O'Connor was going to win. Massive win for the young Australian. His fourth pro win. He's won a stage at Tour of the Alps. Came second yesterday. His fourth pro win, but obviously it's like he's clearly his biggest of his career. I'm not sure if this is like NTT's first World Tour win this season. Maybe they've had one before, but they don't win that often. Nizzolo might have won one if he won Britannia Classic or if it was European Champs. I think it was European Champs he won, so it might not have been that. And then Pernsteiner came second, so he moves up a lot on GC. The Austrian from, I think, 15th to 11th. He's now ahead of Jakob Fuglsang. Third on the stage was Dehent beating Zakarin in the sprint. Fourth, Zakarin. Fifth, Frank Heaney. And sixth, Van Ockelen. We don't really need to go through the rest of the remnants of the breakaway. So, yeah, massive performance from Ben O'Connor. We've got a lovely stock of young climbers for Australia. O'Connor's not that young. He's 24. But, yeah, him, Hindley, I think Power, if he keeps getting a little bit better, Stannard in the rolly stages, or Giro de la Panino style climbs or races, Seb Berwick, etc. I think, yeah, we've got stuff to be excited about as the young Australian climbers. But, yeah, did you think there was any chance that they could bring O'Connor back, Benji, or when, once it went to 30 seconds, were you like, it's lights out?
I hope that Pernsteiner had something in him because I had an ongoing bet on him. Unfortunately, that didn't turn out. He went up second. So very sad day for me today. in general, I do think that Pernsteiner is the kind of rider that has to do it from keeping up the same kind of pace. He does not have any acceleration. He's like the Tim de Klerk of climbers. That's how I see it. Because this man had a bit of an attack when he got away from that second group, but it was nothing with serious acceleration. It was more because De Gendt didn't really respond to it, hoping that Zakarin would make a move. And it was kind of similar towards Thomas De Gendt and Rubio in that earlier stage in the Giro. So Thomas De Gendt in similar situations, once again, stuck with people that are behind him. And yeah, you could call him a wheel sucker, but that's a horrible joke. Anyway, GC... let's jump into that because there was some action there. At the start of the stage, we had the Koenig really move up, and it wasn't really to keep the gap to the peloton under 3 minutes or something. It was to keep it at a margin where I think Pernsteiner doesn't bridge up and become the pink jersey wearer magically. And they did that quite innovatively in the sense that in the descents, they came a bit closer. On the valleys, they rested a bit. And then on the climbs, they kept an easy pace, but decent enough to keep the gap to the front under that margin where Pernsteiner would endanger the likes of an Almeida. So the gap was going to around 8 minutes max, and every single time they paced a bit, it went to 6-7 minutes, and that way they kept that in the clear. But I expected more from people, but on the other end, I didn't, because we said it yesterday that on the Bondone, the second climb of the day, there could be action and there should be action, but it is too far from the finish line with that Durone in the middle of that. That action can happen. I think we spoke about it yesterday. I brought it up that I don't think that GC was going to make a move on that climb. And it was exactly that. They rode that climb at the pace of Ilio Keise, of all people. Like, do you think that at least someone should have tried it? Or do you think that they're clever in some sense to wait for a stage like Stelvio tomorrow? Or is it an issue by the stage creators like we mentioned at the start today?
Yeah, I'm not going to blame the riders, because you're taking a big risk to attack with 80Ks out on a climb that isn't that hard. Like, how often do we see that happen successfully? Froome, in 2018, best Grand Tour rider of his generation, does that with a strong team, with Kenny Elissander setting that up on a much harder climb with Zonkelin and having a shredded GC group behind. And that worked. So we don't have a lot of those situations or factors here today. We have a climb that's not as steep, Bondone. We've got a stage that's not as hard afterwards because the Campiglio is not that difficult. And we've got probably a lot more GC riders that would contribute to a chase, probably 6 or 7. And the person who would do that and be the most likely to do that, Nibali, who I think has okay legs, has no teammates to set it up. So it doesn't make sense, and it can't happen, and that's why it didn't happen. Sunweb aren't 3 minutes behind. Sunweb are like 15 seconds behind Almeida. We've got the Stelvio stage tomorrow, which everyone's thinking about probably when they were doing this stage today. So it was energy conservation, and maybe they were going to have a little bit of a sprint at the end. But that's what we thought would happen. We thought, okay, it makes sense, all logical. Gets on to the Passo Drone, they're chilling too. They've let the break go. Quickstep still pacing. And then they get onto the Campiglio, which I don't know if we called it a fake news climb. It's not. It's pretty much, it is what it is. You know, between 5% and 6%, etc. A little bit flatter at the end. And Sunweb started pacing with Hamilton. And I was like, come on, guys, I just tweeted a nice thing about you yesterday or the other day. What the fuck is going on here? You've not paced on Bondone or all day, and now you're pacing intermittently on Campiglio with, I think, Mosca, the Trek rider, like occasionally taking turns. I didn't know what was going on. I guess it worked in splitting up the group, because they would take 1 minute pulls and then come back to the front and then go off the front and like really accelerate it. And that seemed to work on the steeper sections on the Campiglio to split up the group. So I guess it was softening up. And then I thought, okay, Hindley was pulling. I didn't like that at all, because he's literally third on GC. And if we think he's going to do what we expect tomorrow on Stelvio, he's like second virtually on GC if Almeida doesn't do so well tomorrow, which isn't guaranteed, by the way. And they were pulling with him. I didn't like that. And then next thing we saw, Hindley was attacking. And Benji, you were tweeting about this. Describe the sequence of events with Hindley attacking on Campiglio. Like, at least Sunweb tried something, but it was poorly executed, whatever they were trying.
So in that elite group, two riders were relatively pulling the front to try and control the pace. And that was De Koenig with Joao Almeida in second position and Masnada in first position, holding a pace to prevent attacks, really. But one rider decided to attack, Jai Hindley. And, well, he got a bit of a gap. He got 5 meters, 10 meters. And Masnada was clearly not good enough to follow the pace of Hindley. So at a certain point, someone else was going to have to close down that gap. Maybe an Almeida, maybe a Nibali, maybe anyone, but not Kelderman. And what did Kelderman do? He decided to wait until the gap to Hindley was about 20 meters. And he closed down the gap, basically. He tried to bridge towards him and maybe thought that it was some kind of a satellite rider move, but that's not really the case, because he only had 20 meters. If you want to prepare something magical, some 1,000 IQ move, then he needs to have a bigger gap before you bridge towards him. But now Hindley was loose and you closed down the gap to him. So I don't know what Kelderman was thinking. I think he was just being somewhat egocentric and somewhat understandably going for his own chances here and making sure that Hindley's not the rider that tries to take his victory in this Giro away. And that's the same thing that Nibali said in an interview yesterday, that he was trying to get in those people's heads, in Kelderman's head and Hindley's head. And he said in an interview, Kelderman's main competitor might actually end up being Jai Hindley. And today we saw exactly that action. Hindley attacks, gets 20 meters, and Kelderman closes it down. And I don't get it on a team perspective, on a personal perspective from Kelderman, who is leaving the team. That might be an excuse for closing it down and be purely thinking about himself here. And I feel like that's not really a good thing to do, considering you're trying to win a Grand Tour for your team as well, not only for yourself. But hey, what's your take on it?
Yeah, I think they were trying to do the satellite rider thing and just botched it. And then once it didn't work, they shut it down. And long story short, they Quickstep went back on the front, setting a moderate tempo. Masnada was shouting at people, his own team, and Kelderman, etc. They slapped, I think, Peter Sedi back on the front, pasted in. Almeida then won the... Did he win it? Yeah, he normally wins it. No, he didn't actually. Sorry, I think there were no bonus seconds left on the line because the breakaway mopped them up. They were all sprinting for 11th. And Gagan Hart, who maybe thought there was bonus seconds, sprinted for the line. And he had Hindley on his wheel, who, because there's 1 second difference between them. And I think Almeida knew that there wasn't, once he saw that it wasn't Kelderman attacking, he kind of didn't really contest the sprint at all. He just followed Kelderman. So not that exciting a stage, but good win for Ben O'Connor. No movement on GC from the main guys. Fuglsang, if he wants to salvage anything from this Giro, it's going to have to be tomorrow. Stage 18, the big boy. Whew, 208 kilometres, and we've got two Cat 1s, a Cat 2, and the only HC climb for the Giro. They've called this an HC climb. It's first out of the neutral zone. They do 14.2 Ks, 5.8% descent, couple of valleys, then the Hofmannjoch, 8.6 Ks, 8.9%, Cat 1, not an easy climb. Descent again, then they got the feed zone valley, uphill drag, false side uphill on the way to the Prato alla Stelvio, and then they do the Stelvio, 25 Ks, 7.5%, up to 2,750 meters altitude. Then the descent, long descent, and then they climb up the Torri di Fraiele. 9 Ks at 6.8%, not an easy climb either. I'm pretty sure that's, it's got like 8% sections in it too. Stelvio's got a few Ks. It's pretty regular Stelvio, to be honest. It's got a few sections in the middle that are pretty hard, consistently 9.5%. And the Hofmannjoch is hard too. It's got some harder sections in it as well. I picked Miguel Angel Lopez to win this stage before the Giro started, just because of the altitude, etc. And tomorrow I'm unsure of who's going to win yet, Benji. I don't know if it's going to be a break or not. I feel like it will be I think a break will get a lot of time, but I feel like it's such a hard stage that they might just end up being brought back inadvertently by the GC group. What do you think?
I think so as well. I think it's going to be a GC race. And, well, for my pick for the breakaway, if it does come down to a breakaway, I'm going to bring you back to a historical, monumental moment in Belgian cycling where Thomas de Gendt ended up taking a place on the podium of the Giro there in 2012. What a wonderful stage. And it is somewhat of a biased pick. Gotta warn you there. This is a completely biased pick, but I think that if it comes down to a breakaway, Thomas de Gendt will repeat history. And he won't come onto the podium of a Grand Tour, but he might want to redo it because it's a Stelvio and he's got a history here. So I'm going to call him if it comes down to a breakaway. Someone I want to be in the breakaway is the two riders I've been shouting at to go in the breakaway for the whole Giro, but they haven't. So I'm going to shout at them again. Please go in the breakaway, Valter. please go in the breakaway by a band where you're sitting in the top 25. There's nothing to be gained by being 24th in GC. Maybe you just want that to say after this year, well, I got a top 25 at the Giro, but what if you can get a victory on the Parco Nazionale dello Stelvio climb? No, that's the finish. I mean, the Plato dello Stelvio, right? Or is it? I don't know the climb name, actually.
I don't know. Stelvio.
Passo dello Stelvio. That's it.
I don't know what Valter's been doing in the Giro. Maybe he's not well. I don't know.
I don't know either. But if it comes down to GC, well, I could either go for an extremely biased pick and go for Nibali, because I hope that he makes a move as a Nibali stan myself. But without a team, I see it very unlikely. He's lost everybody. He's got Antonio Nibali and Mosca, and he's not going to do it with Antonio Nibali and Mosca. And because of that, I don't see him dropping most of the Sunweb team on that climb, except for if he goes early and really does it 1v1 and probably blows up himself after a while doing so. So I find it really hard to think about that and make sure that he can get away solely. It will be fought on the Stelvio for me, I think. I'd expect it to be there. 25 kilometers of climbing, you can't just neglect that as GC guys. And if I have to do a non-biased prediction, I think that Tao Gegenhardt is going to win the stage. And he's going to come very close to taking the Maglia Rossa. I think that Sunweb is going to fuck up in their Hindley versus Kelderman effect.
I'm going with the back-to-back Australians. I'm going with Hindley to win the stage. If it was on the top of the Stelvio, the finale, I'd maybe not, but the last climb I think suits him pretty well. I think if Kelderman doesn't bring him back today, maybe if it was a harder climb as well, he would have got a nice gap and won the stage, or would have gapped the GC riders. But it's who knows what will happen tomorrow. It's a beast of a stage, probably the most calories they're going to burn, you'd think, in any of the stages. So it's going to be cold. That descent off the Stelvio is going to be sketchy, you'd think. So, yeah, who knows what could happen. Maybe someone gets a big gap on the descent. I'm not sure how good Hindley is at descending compared to the other riders. Wouldn't even surprise me if Almeida does well, to be honest, because he's pretty good on the descents and the flats, etc. But moving on to the Vuelta Stage 2, pretty simple stage, as we said, from Pamplona to Lecumberri. Three major climbs, a Cat 3 of no real moment, 7.2Ks at 4.8%, 6.8Ks at 5.7% in the middle Cat 3. Neither of them are going to present any issues for any GC riders, except Chris Froome. And then the last climb of the day was the Alto de San Miguel de Aralá, which is 9.5Ks at 8%, which is a very difficult climb. It's like on those cement blocks. It's not like real bitumen. And like an irregular gradient too, really steep. Then they got a descent with, an irregular descent all the way into Lecumberri, 151Ks, three climbs, and Jumbo Visma and Movistar were not having a bar of the breakaway once again today. I can't even remember who were in the break, Benji, because when I see it's being held at 90 seconds, I'm just like, you're doomed. So enjoy the TV time, and I'll wait until you get brought back.
Yeah, the breakaway felt pretty doomed at the start. They kept that gap pretty low with the likes of Aramburu in there. Alex Aramburu, I would have loved for him to have an opportunity here, but it didn't really turn out. I can already spoil that. Amirel for FDJ, Groupama FDJ. And we've got Tim Wellens for Lotto Soudal, second day in a row, so he's clearly trying something. Hiver for Total Direct Energie, not Tour Direct Energie. That's not a thing. Serrano for Caja Rural, we saw him a bit yesterday, but was in the break today. So a break of five riders, some decent riders in there, some solid breakaway riders, but the gap was being held relatively at 3 minutes at the start. And it was only on the Puerto de Urbasa, the second climb of the day, where someone of that breakaway decided to make a little bit of a move. Tim Mullins attacked, went on one of his known solos, actually got a bit of a gap of 1 minute 30 on the other breakaway competitors, but something happened after that second climb, because in the peloton they started speeding up quite a lot. Like, we do add to that Froome was already at trouble at this point, so like you say, Froome, the GC favorite for Ineos, is not looking too good. Nonetheless, we saw that Movistar was pacing a lot in that peloton, and we're thinking maybe something happened, but it was a bit of an echelon case. There was a lot of wind. Storm Barbarossa, or whatever it's called, is passing through Spain. We saw it at the end of last stage as well, with the rain and such on Arate. But here was really windy, and the peloton broke up in multiple pieces, but no one really important was behind. I think Guillaume Martin was one of the more, I guess, more outsider favorites of this Vuelta that is behind. Outside of him, I didn't really see anyone else behind. Am I wrong in that, or am I just... Because just at me, I'll just add to this that nobody had a clue who was in the second group, because this Vuelta coverage is relatively awful outside of the elite group.
The graphics and description of who was in each group was just... The helicopter was like taking the photos from Mars. It was so bad. I couldn't tell who was where. But yeah, it was... I only really think of the main GC contenders as Mas, Roglic, Kuss, Dumoulin, and Carapaz anyway. Maybe that's short-sighted. So I saw they were there at the front. Roglic was chilling. And we saw that Movistar last year. I sort of had this Freudian slip because I saw him do exactly the same thing last year with Mikel Landa in the Tour de France. Andre Amador on a flat section when no one expected it. Now on Ineos, now with his former colleague at Movistar, now also at Ineos, Richard Carapaz, in the green jersey, maybe feeling the punch of the green points jersey. They attacked on this flat rolling terrain before the last climb. So I'm not sure whether they picked up the intermediate sprint points or not. I don't think they did. Again, the coverage made it difficult to see what was happening, but they got a decent-ish gap, and it was Movistar trying to relay initially. Then Jumbo-Visma came to the front with, was it Martins pulling Dumoulin's father? And then they didn't really make much of an impression either. He got tired, but then it was Movistar pulling once again. And they got to the base then. And it seemed like, okay, they're setting Carapaz up. Instead of attacking on the climb when everyone's watching and maybe Movistar are pacing, why not attack 5Ks before the final climb and when no one's looking? And then you're basically already onto the climb in the wheel of Amador. That's what happened. But they got caught pretty soon, actually, maybe sooner than Ineos expected on that climb with Amador pulling. He pulled off and Carapaz had gone on his own, but the gap was like 5 seconds, and I'm not sure if he went full or not, or if he didn't have the legs today. He was being chased pretty vigorously, but still by a pretty large group behind, by Movistar, who I think Movistar were the strongest overall team today. Very good team performance from Movistar, not being sarcastic, like hats off to them. And then I think Luis Leon Sanchez, who he's in the Spanish national champs jersey, so sometimes you can forget that he's not on Movistar, he's on Astana. He attacked on this climb, brave from him, but I thought that's a bit of an unusual name to be doing that. It was a little bit too hard. He got brought back, and then I think they pretty much, there weren't too many attacks until the last maybe 500 meters to the last kilometer of the climb, Benji. It was kind of neutralized at that point before then.
For Movistar, the strongest rider in the race was clearly Marc Soler, their domestique. I don't know if he was stronger than Mas. I can't say that, but he was pacing for the majority of the last section of that climb, and he kept it so that nobody else could attack. He kept up an extremely large tempo, dropping like, well, we can say Vlasov, but Vlasov looked better than yesterday.
Grosjean.
Apparently he crashed yesterday. Yeah, Grosjean was one of the riders that dropped indeed. A bit unfortunate, because yesterday was really strong, 15 GC before the stage started, but was unable to follow. And so he kept on mashing those pedals, And one of the other riders that tried an attack at a certain point was Carapaz. He was being closed down once again by the Movistar boys. And it was only towards the end of the climb where somebody else really made a move, and that was Sepkus trying to, I don't know, get the KOM points or getting away from the group. Could be either one of the two because he had a KOM jersey, but I don't think he really cares about that, to be fairly honest. I'm not sure he does. And the person that was closing that down was once again the rider we've been talking about quite a few times as the rider that we see as one of the strongest riders in the race right now, is Richard Carapaz. He was once again closing that down, and Marc Soler closing that two-man breakaway, I'd say, down once again for his leader, Mas, who was on a tiny bit of a gap at the top. Together with Roglic, they were on like 5 meters or something at the top. So I'm not sure whether Roglic was calculating it in. Well, we're at the top almost, I can get to it. But I feel like if you're in that group and somebody attacks, you want to be on the wheel just in case. Definitely if you're in the red jersey and are the GC leader of your team, I would detect at this moment. So do you feel like Roglic was showing somewhat of a weakness, or did you just think that he was saying, oh, okay, let's leave a bit of a gap open and I'll close it down in a second?
Yeah, I didn't really think that was too much weakness. I think at the end of the day, Movistar got a nice stage win today with Soler getting a big gap on the descent where he just rode off the front and then was able to keep it, and there was no real section for any of the other teams to bring him back. And Jumbo Visma didn't care about him being off the front. He lost over a minute yesterday. Ineos didn't have really anyone to pace for Carapaz, and obviously Movistar, the strongest team, weren't going to chase. So once Soler got that gap, stage win guaranteed. But Ineos did a lot of work today too, and Carapaz attacked a lot. And at the end of the day, it's Roglic who's the man who's gained more time on GC. So he's increased his gap from 5 seconds to 9 seconds over Martin, and to 11 seconds on Carapaz, because I think Carapaz got beaten by Martin in the sprint for when he, Roglic and Martin were sprinting for seconds. So yeah, Roglic, job done again. Gap to now 9 seconds to Martin and 11 seconds to Carapaz. So yeah, I don't think, I couldn't really say there's any weakness from Roglic. I mean, I'm not sure what his plan was, whether he could have attacked at the top of that climb, but maybe he was letting Kuss do it. Maybe the pace from Soler probably was really, really hot. So he thought, oh, I'll just leave it for today. But yeah, great performance from Movistar. Obviously, Soler posted up and lost about 6 seconds at the end when he was celebrating. So he obviously doesn't think he's going for general classification. He'd probably be eighth on GC if he'd ridden hard to the line. But yeah, maybe he just thinks he's there as a domestique and to get stage wins here or there. But I don't think that's true. I think Soler is good enough to be a second foil for Movistar if used correctly. I think he's really strong. And if they used him right, he could be a second GC leader. He's certainly stronger than Dumoulin, who is not having a good Vuelta so far. He lost 9 minutes, Benji. Did you see that?
It's crazy. Yeah. He dropped from the group quite early on. And it was just after Hesing dropped that Dumoulin dropped. So I was like, oh, Hesing's coming back. And then I saw the number and the posture, and it was clearly not Hesing. So very early on dropping and not really looking promising for the Jumbo strength. Bennett's stronger than him. Bennett was able to follow until relatively at the top, where he lost about 10 seconds together with Bajoli. And Bajoli lost more time than Bennett in the end. So Bennett was able to get rid of Bajoli near the top and close on the gap again a bit more towards the group. So I don't know. I feel like Bennett, Kuss, and Roglic are the three members of that team that are looking the strongest. I might have been a bit too harsh on Jumbo yesterday, in the sense that they had like 5 riders in the top 17. But I generally didn't notice Hesing coming back, finishing 12th. But I wanted to throw that to you. We've seen in yesterday's stage that Robert Hesing is working for Jumbo. We've seen domestiques work for that team. And yesterday, I felt that Hesing just kept on riding through the line, even when he was dropped. So as a GC rider, you would say to your domestiques, most likely, if you drop, just loosen up, because you might as well save energy for the rest of these 17 days still in this Grand Tour. While Hesing did the opposite and just went AWOL to the line and finished 12th on that stage yesterday. So maybe he's not really doing the same tactic as an Ineos domestique. When he drops, then they basically just sleep halfway and try and survive till the line without spending any energy at all. So it's a bit of a different tactic, it seems. But today he seemed like Hesing did actually loosen up and lost 15 minutes. So I don't know why he did it yesterday.
I think there's a reason yesterday. It was to help Dumoulin, who dropped. So he was like, get back to Dumoulin, try and pace him back. I think
that's a good call then. Yeah, because he actually ended in the Dumoulin group. So good call, actually. Yeah. So all in all, that team is looking strong. Ineos looking stronger than the Tour de France for sure with Carapaz and, well, Amador, who is looking like a monster here. Sosa, yeah, a bit under my expectations, though, but do you feel like there's any team outside of those that is doing as good? Do you think Movistar is on the level of Jumbo here?
I think Movistar are deeper, like on the climbs. I think Movistar can control the whole day if they really wanted to, particularly on some of these climbs. I think when it really gets down to the pointy end, Kuss and Roglic is just so fucking strong. Like, it's just ridiculous, that pairing. And, yeah, so I think Movistar are a little bit deeper if this Vuelta, but that's great. But Roglic and Kuss are probably just one and two best climbers in the race, with Carapaz and Mas third and fourth. But Dan Martin also having a lovely Vuelta so far. He came third yesterday. He came third today, I think, when he was just behind Roglic in the sprint. Dan Martin wouldn't surprise me if he got on the podium too. I mean, you know, I don't want to jinx him now, but if he just follows wheels all Vuelta and just loses bonus seconds to Roglic the whole time, and that's the way the race is raced, maybe he gets on the podium as well. But it's been an interesting first couple of stages at the Vuelta. I think, obviously, I was wrong to criticise Jumbo-Visma for dropping Dumoulin more yesterday because he's done on GC, so he's going to be a domestique or maybe go for stages later. But tomorrow's profile is kind of strange. A Category 3 climb, a really long, low-gradient one, is how they start in this 165K stage from La Dosa to La Laguna Negra de Vinuesa. 17Ks at 2.7%, so there'll be no GC action there. And I wonder if a break, we'll struggle to actually get away there as well because, I don't think it'll be a breakaway tomorrow. Then they've got a long valley, about, how long? 40, 50Ks, 50, 60Ks, and then they start a Cat 1 climb, which would be a Cat 3 in the Giro. So it's not that hard, 6.5Ks at 6.7%. Just checking the profile, though, it looks like an undulating climb once again. So it's 6%, 6.5% average gradient, but the last K is 8.5%, and I think probably check out Benji's Twitter to see if we burrow down into that actual last kilometer. Maybe there's some walls in there. So it's going to be a sprint finish, I think. And I think Roglic wins tomorrow again.
Yeah, you said it. You said it on the preview. Roglic was your favorite for this one.
Oh, really?
I feel like it's a typical Vuelta stage in the sense that it's got this wall at the end, but it's not as steep as usual. Yes, usually we've got like 20% gradients on these walls at the end, but I don't mind it being a bit less steep because otherwise I'd say Roglic for sure. So I think that we're going to see an interesting race, and I'm going to... good question. How long is the climb? The climb is 6.5 kilometers. Starting section, not that hard. I'm going to go for a stretch here, and I'm going to say that the winner is going to be... I don't know. On paper, I'd say Roglic as well, but I want to give Valverde a chance. He was in the front group today. And if he has to do something in this Vuelta for stage wins, then it's going to happen on a stage like this where the climb is only 7 kilometers and the last portion is steep, but the first portion being 6% and a half. So, yeah, I say Valverde, just give him a chance. I do think Roglic has a better chance, but my pick is Valverde for the third stage. But it's clearly going to be, for me, the GC or... Actually, 166 kilometers. You see an opportunity for a breakaway?
Not really. I think Movistar will be interested. If I was Movistar, I'd ride this full for Soler. I think Soler could win tomorrow if they rode for him, to be honest. I think he won a one-day race in Spain at the start of the year with a similar sort of climb, beat Rui Costa. I know it's a preseason race, but yeah, I think if they rode for him. If they rode for Soler, he'd have an actual chance to win tomorrow. I'm not sure they will, but yeah, I hope they do. I don't think Mas has the kick. Carapaz obviously can win it. I'll be annoyed if Carapaz wins tomorrow and Roglic won stage one. I had them the other way around. Obviously, Carapaz can win tomorrow as well. But Groschartner suits him maybe a little bit more. I think it's a little bit hard for Groschartner to be winning. I think he'll be hanging on rather than winning. I think he's better at the 1,500-meter climbs. than the 6.5K ones. But just trying to give someone give people a bit of an outside pick for tomorrow's stage. It's always a bit boring to just go Roglic and Dan Martin. Dan Martin could win too.
Yeah, true.
But he's so close on GC, Roglic should just be marking him. You know, he'll mark him so closely. And Michael Woods looks ill or suffering from that crash, rather. Not ill, injured. So he struggled a lot today too on a climb before it even got hard. He got dropped. So I don't see him contending for tomorrow, even though it's like Milano-Torino finish. You'd think he would be up there, but I don't see it. You got any roughies, any outsiders, Benji?
Not really. I don't think it's going to be an outsider, so there's no real point diving into them for this one, I'd say. We don't really have that outsider that has the ability of launching away on the climb and just being far already on GC. I don't think if Vlasov is going to do anything here. I don't think if Martinez is going to do anything here. So, yeah, I think that it's going to be the GC favorites indeed. I don't think it's going to be a breakaway eater, mainly because I feel like Jumbo controlled the race quite well at the start today as well. So they've got Tom Dumoulin's dad, Martin Wainans, to try and take care of that a bit together with Leonard Hofstede. Yeah, we're making this a thing. Wainans is Dumoulin's dad, and that's a
conspiracy theory for this one. It's not Wainans, it's Martins.
What?
It's Paul Martins.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm so confused now.
No.
How did you see any correlation there?
It's him. He's got a beard. Trust me, it's his dad. Look it up. Look at the race footage. Don't look at his little PNG file image. Look at the race footage. Paul Martin's facts. It's Tom Dumoulin's dad.
Okay. I guess that's how we'll end this Vuelta stage preview, because I've got not much more to add to it. We've done the Giro today. We've done the Vuelta. We're in the running. We're going to leave the Three Dogs de Pona Brugge for tomorrow. It's Brugge de Pona. It's the other way around. Because you are very sleepy, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. That's all from us. See you tomorrow. Ciao.